Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Well, welcome back to Books to Die For, brought to you by the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Our guest today will be an author, and he was a host with House of Mystery as well, John Copenhaver. Thank you for being on the show.
Hey, Al. It's fun to be on as an author instead of an interviewer, although I enjoy that greatly as well.
Yeah, but you get asked the questions now. You're under the spotlight.
I am. I have to. I better perform, right? I better get it right.
Yeah, be correct here. So now you've got a new book coming out June 4th. It's called Hall of Mirrors, and it's a novel. So this is a Judy Nightingale and Philippa Watson mystery. So let's talk about that book. So what's the basic premise of the book to start out with?
Yeah, so, it is the second book in a trilogy. The Savage Kind that came out in 2021. It's the first involving both these characters, Judy Nightingale and Philippa Watson, who were in 1948, teenage girls. This book, Hall of Mirrors, takes them to 1954 during the height of the McCarthy era in Washington, D.C. And it's a mystery novel, so like Savage Kind, the girls, now young women, are solving a mystery having to do with their favorite crime writer, Ray Kane, who features, or at least his name features, in the first book. In this one, we find out that Ray Kane is actually two gay men who write underneath the pseudonym of Ray Kane. Roger, one of the couple, works for the State Department. And if you know anything about the McCarthy era in Washington, D.C., you know about the Red Scare and perhaps the Lavender Scare. The Lavender Scare was a time in history when there were state-sanctioned firings of, a lot of them were State Department employees, but government employees who were gay and lesbian. It was also, they were outed during this process. And in the 1950s, being outed was, of course, something considered very shameful for that time period. And they would lose their livelihood. Their families would be destroyed. A lot of these men and women really struggled. Some of them even took their own lives. So it was a terrible time of prejudice in that period. So I was really interested in taking characters, particularly these two men, and looking at sort of the impact that time period had on them. I know it's a fascinating time period, but pretty complex and socially conservative and problematic.
Yeah, it was a pretty intense time, right? It was the old-fashioned way of canceling because people were losing their jobs. It was really big with Hollywood, right? A lot of Hollywood stars and Hedda Hopper were going after anybody that they thought was a commie, and they'd lose their job. And then gay and lesbian and even black Americans were under fire because anytime someone protested, they figured it was to do with communism.
Yeah, I think in many ways they're using the threat of communism as the tool to consolidate power and as an excuse for discriminating against, as you mentioned, Black people, and certainly anyone who was interested in communism. We're not talking about folks that were trying to infiltrate the government, but simply folks who are interested in it as a political philosophy. And of course, you know, queer people were all, and anyone, honestly, that was an outsider in a, you know, particularly sort of patriarchal time period was, you know, under great scrutiny. You want to explore these things in a book, right? But you want to, you know, if you can explore them pretty directly, but I really enjoy mystery stories. So I really wanted to explore them through an interesting and kind of exciting thriller tale, but also kind of get at some of these, you know, deeper issues of the time period.
Now, your mystery novelist dies, like one of them in this book. So did you have someone in mind? Or did this just, you know, or were these, this couple, you said a biracial couple that's writing a book under the name.
Yeah.
So were you inspired by any writers yourself, any people that you know maybe that inspired this couple, these two people?
Well, this idea came about because I learned about the writer Patrick Quinton. There are several different writers writing underneath his name, but one of them was a pair of writers who were thought to be gay. I never quite confirmed that, but a lot of people feel that was the case. They wrote under this name, Great Mystery Novels, and stories. It's just, I just sort of got a little like spark of inspiration, and they were writing during this time period, by the way, a little spark of inspiration from, you know, learning about that. I've always been fascinated by writing pairs because, frankly, I would find it very difficult to do that. But I loved it, and I thought there was a potential for an interesting mystery here. And, you know, my story begins with one of them dead, being burned in a fire. And then the other is trying to, of course, help with Judy and Philippa's help figure out what happened. The question that continues to come up for me during this is, what does it mean to be sort of writing underneath a pseudonym? What does it mean to be in the closet? What does it mean to pass? Because Judy passes as white, but she's not. Lionel, the character, the living part of the duo, the writing duo, is black, but he's been writing underneath, you know, with the face of his lover and co-writer on the cover. So he's been sort of writing. And of course, this time period, they had to do these things. They had to do those things to survive. Like, passing was part of surviving. And I wanted to explore that, because I think sometimes we take that for granted today. That, you know, that folks had to conceal their true selves, not because they wanted to, not because they were trying to be deceptive, but because survival required it. And so I think that was very much an avenue I wanted to go down with this book. And also sort of playing with the idea of, you know, if you're not who you appear to be, then, you know, who are you to yourself and to the world, and letting a mystery kind of pull us along through that sort of exploration as well.
I've heard you read part of it when we were doing the noir for the bar.
So right.
Did you write it from just the one same person's perspective, the one lover that survived throughout the whole book, or do you go through two different people?
Yeah, so I have I cover two perspectives. One is Lionel, the lover who survives. A portion of that is what I read. I think it was maybe the first chapter of it that I read for Noir at the Bar. And then the second is from Judy's perspective. And Judy, of course, is a carryover character from The Savage Kind. I wanted two perspectives. There's sort of structural reasons, plot reasons why I needed that to occur. But I also really wanted both these characters who are concealing themselves in different ways for different reasons to sort of, for us to be getting their inner voices and to sort of, you know, go on that journey with them. You know, I think it's also exciting for a reader to kind of get to more than one perspective, particularly if you're thinking about a crime. And for whatever reason in my books, and this is true for all of my books, I always have a crime which is really open to interpretation. And in Hall of Mirrors, we have an apartment fire with a dead body. We're not even sure, 100% sure, that the body is Roger Lionel's lover, but it could possibly be, it may not be. So there's a lot of interpretation going on in an attempt to understand that. And from both, from two perspectives, Lionel's and Judy's and Philippa's as well. So I love playing with that constantly shifting perspective on things. I think it's fun as a reader to experience that. And then you get to explore sort of, you know, appearance versus reality and that kind of thing as well. It was really fun. Both voices were really fun to write.
Well, is there a reason why you don't want them to know who the body was or who it belonged to and all that? Do you want to focus on other things, or what's the reason in writing that way?
Well, I mean, one is there's a mystery, right? I'm essentially setting out to draw that question up for the reader. Like, is this Roger's body or is this someone else's body? Is this, you know, if so, who? If it is Roger, why, you know? You know, the initial, you know, early on, the police are like, well, it was a suicide. You know, this guy put his head in the oven and, you know, because he had been fired from the State Department and outed, and so he wanted to end his life. And, you know, almost all the characters, you know, say that's BS. All the characters we care about know that's got to be BS in some way. And I definitely wanted to run against the narrative of a gay man killing himself. Like, I mean, it did happen. It was true. But I also didn't want that to be the story. But I think it presents a question, ultimately, to the reader, you know, and you can continue to sort of pull the layers back on that question, you know, and it becomes not just, of course, you know, who did it, you know, it also becomes, who is it? and so it's like a double question. Is it, you know, we don't even know who the body is necessarily in the beginning. Why not ask more questions? It's just more things to discover for the reader. So I think it's really why I came to that kind of device as a crime writer. Thematic reasons, I think it has a lot to do, as this is also the theme of my work, you know, be careful of making assumptions about people. As a gay man myself, you know, I think people make a lot of assumptions. When I was in the closet, and I was married for a time to a woman, people made a lot of assumptions, you know, in some cases rightfully so. But I think that I'm very interested in, even now, as a gay man, people make assumptions about you. And I think this is something that I constantly like to undermine as a writer. I think it's important for us to look past our first assumptions. As a reader, or as a consumer of stories in all fashions, I love it when my assumptions are sort of turned on their head. I think that's exciting because, you know, you kind of realize there's so much more to the world than you're giving it credit for. And there's more to people than we sometimes give them credit for. So
when you're writing two lead characters from their points of view, how do you make it so that people don't get confused on who's doing the talking when you first get into a chapter?
Yeah, so this is a big craft question. I have dealt with on my own in a variety of different ways in my writing, and I have, you know, I'm also a teacher, so I've sort of instructed students on this, and it's tricky. For Hall of Mirrors, I made the choice to put Lionel in the present tense and Judy in the past tense. It works well because Lionel's sort of narrative is much more like this, you know, a tighter time frame, a more quickly unfolding mystery. It's just really going down in a matter of a few days. The Judy, you know, points of view happen over years. And then they, of course, as when you're dealing with points of view in fiction, they will ultimately intersect. But I thought, you know, present tense for Lionel made, because of the urgency, made a lot of sense. In my first book, Dodging and Burning, which was a standalone and was my debut, I had two characters, Ciola and Bunny, and they both came from the same hometown. They both were, you know, not that far apart in age. And in an early version of that novel, they just sounded too much alike. And folks were saying, you know, I'm having trouble keeping track of which character is which. And I said, okay, I have to do something that really distinguishes them. And I did a rewrite of that novel in which Ciola is no longer college educated, and she's addressing her dead brother, which is an important plot point in that novel.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
The addressing of the brother and the changing of words that she would use, what kind of diction she would use, really helped distinguish her from Bunny, who is very worldly and educated, and a little snooty. And so they, their voices pop. But when you're writing, you know, more than one perspective, you do have to find ways to, distinguish the perspectives. You know, readers will get lost. And so I think it's very important to ground them that way. I have to deal with students who, all their characters kind of sound the same. Like, you need to dig into their, you know, their points of view a little bit more and give them different voices. And sometimes to do that, you just have to find like what ultimately shapes their voice. What is it? Education? Is it environment? Is it attitude? There's all sorts of things, but you know, have to think through those things a little bit to make sure that they stand out.
How is it that you can write from a woman's point of view, for instance, like you're talking about Judy as one of the characters you write from their point of view. So how do you get into that mindset and able to pull it off to where it sounds like Judy Nightingale?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because I've been asked a lot. I almost all my novels have female protagonists. In fact, Lionel is my first male point of view character. In my first book, there's a very important central character who is a gay man, but he doesn't really have a full point of view, I should say. But I think that it's never been this big leap for me in terms of like getting to, it wasn't like this sort of, you know, big task that I had to do. And I think this largely has to do with the fact that I grew up around a lot of various strong female influences in my life. These voices came really naturally to me, I guess is what I'm saying. And I think I had those rhythms in my head already. I think it goes back to like, don't assume, you know, don't assume that, you know, the way someone shows up in the world necessarily indicates their experiences. And when you grow up around a lot of strong women, which I did, my dad died when I was pretty young and my brothers were much older than me left home. So I was sort of home and my mom and other, you know, really sort of key figures in my life. And then a lot of teachers who were women who influenced me greatly. So I think these voices kind of came naturally to me. But you do want to be thoughtful. And I'm not, you know, I think you do whenever you're writing across difference, you need, you know, someone to read and offer, you know, another perspective. Because you don't want to just assume you're going to get it right. You've got to do your research. You've got to make sure that, you know, this is landing right. And so for all my books, I have had readers, that were women, or people of color. If I'm doing a character like Lionel, who is black, you want to make sure that you're capturing and being fair to that point of view. It's also, and this is something I feel pretty strongly about, like, you know, I do think we need to be able to write across difference, because I think in doing so, you can build, you know, it's a gesture of empathy. You know, if we only stay in our lanes and write as ourselves, we're essentially just writing memoir. We're also kind of, it's sort of pessimistic. It's like saying we don't have the capability to be empathetic. We don't have the capability to write outside of our own perspective, which I think is just so vital. Now, I will add that you've got to do your work, do your homework, and make sure that when you're doing that, that's part of empathy, though. You're doing it well. And if you don't do it well, be willing to take the criticism. I think that's fine, too. I just hope more of this is a dialogue and not sort of canceling. I'm not a fan of cancel culture, generally speaking. Some of it's because the people who really need to be canceled never really are. So it just isn't effective. And so often the people that could have benefited from a conversation get canceled and there's no conversation. And so I think, you know, I do think we need to have discussions around this sort of topic. But the fun of fiction is to write outside of your experience, you know.
And also writing in the 1950s, 60s, that kind of time frame. How do you research that in the, not only with McCarthy, but, you know, what people had in their homes, or what they liked to drink, or what they liked to do for entertainment. Like just common things to create your character so that you kind of feel them out, because their lifestyle would have been way different than it is now in 2024.
There's many levels of research, and I think they're all kind of important. There's the high-level research, which, you know, reading, for instance, in my case, reading about Joseph McCarthy and understanding his rise and fall, his relationship to the government, to the times, and then, you know, even, you know, the role that, like, the Korean War is sort of playing during this time period, and all the stuff, you know, that is kind of doing your history homework. And that's important. It's also really important to figure out what, you know, a lived life felt like then. And that can be, you know, you kind of start with cars and clothes and hairdos, right? You want to get the sort of the costume of the time period down. But I had a lot of fun and some difficulty, but a lot of fun. I have, so you'll appreciate this, Al. Judy goes to work at a radio station in the 1950s, uh-huh. And she, you know, they're not letting her on the air yet, but she does get a chance to go on the air. And, like, kind of dealing with workplace dynamics and how a radio station would work at that time, and, you know, the TV was coming in and taking over. So, like, that was sort of more sort of fun, sort of specific research for the time period. And then, you know, magazines are great, like magazines from the time period, catalogs from the time period, a great way to research, like, what daily life was like, and answer little questions like, you know, what kind of coffee, you know, someone was drinking at that point in time, or how are they having it, you know, those little things that, I think those details, they seem small, but they accrue, and they really create, a real sort of verisimilitude for the reader, which I think is an important part of, especially if you're writing historical.
Yeah. And then you can see the place you're in and everything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
How the characters. So what is it you hope people take away from the book? What is it you want them to think about, or is it just entertainment?
No, it's definitely more than entertainment. I do want it to be entertaining, and I think that's important. You know, I want to create a world, even if it's a world of the past that readers lose themselves in. But, you know, I am up to other things. It's true, I think, in each of my books, and, you know, in this one particularly, I wanted to say something about, you know, certainly how difficult it was in this time period to be out, to be black, to be a woman, and if you had a lot of those things, or you had a cross section of those things, your life became even more difficult. The anger that creates in people, and the results of trauma, and how we sort of process, and in some cases the right way, in some cases the wrong way, process trauma. I did want to sort of show those constraints. This is part of my feeling that we do easily forget exactly what it was like to live and to be in different time periods. And, you know, and there's an ebb and flow to them too. But I think in the 1950s particularly, it was a pretty oppressive time. And I think that I hope my book describes some of that. And really, hopefully for readers, you know, makes these characters live for them in a way that they can kind of feel a little bit of what it was like to be who they are at that time. And even in some cases when they're doing bad things, just to be sympathetic, maybe understand a little bit where that comes from. Cause I don't write like characters who are, you know, like angels. I think it's kind of boring. I like characters that have texture and sometimes make poor choices, or really poor choices. But I think that that's certainly what I hope readers will take away from it.
How do you handle writing the violence in the sense of, like, speech, like the way people talk to minorities back then, and even gay people? Like, what, it, you know, because it was, first of all, being homosexual was illegal.
Right.
So you were a criminal and you had a mental illness, right? So that was just right off the bat, something wrong with you. So they didn't necessarily treat you the best. And with gay people, I think they made fun of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we see it on TV or something, they'll make a joke of it as being like you're something wrong, you know? And black people as well. I mean, they were treated harshly, or they, you know, people said harsh things to them. How do you handle that in your book? Do you avoid writing any of that sort of dialogue, or do you stay away from it, or do you actually bring that in?
I do not stay away from it, and I do it with care, but I don't stay away from it. The reason I don't stay away from it is I think if we don't really face the violence of the past, whether it's the use of language or literal violence, both of which occur in my book, we are contributing to essentially an erasure of those things that had happened, even in fiction, if we avoid them. I think we're contributing to sort of an illusion of what the past was. And my goodness, our particularly, even these days, the 1950s are held up as this sort of idealistic time period that, you know, really crafted even contemporary American identity. I think we're still kind of, you know, in this, but if we don't look at what that was, what was actually going on. so yeah, I mean, there are moments, where the violence of the language does come out. I mean, you know, in those moments, who's using it is, and how they're using it. And, you know, and they are good guys, you know. And I also particularly wanted to show how it affected the person on the receiving end, what it does emotionally, because I do think we need to understand that. So, no, I don't shy away from it. I don't, like, try to lean into it in that sort of way that I think sometimes can happen, where people are trying too hard to make a point or digging salacious about it. I think that's as problematic as leaving it out. But you want to find the moment where you can really sort of help the reader understand the impact of language or physical violence or together, which is often the case. The goal here is to make the reader feel something, and they feel something, and they grow in their understanding of what a character, even if they're fictional, might have experienced, you're growing their empathy. And I think any writer who really cares about character, we may want to entertain, but the other goal, the main goal, is to build empathy and connection between people through our writing. That's kind of what I hope I do. you gotta have those moments of emotional, like, this is painful, this is a little painful, but you've got to get through it so you understand. And then if you're really connected to that character, then the way they behave and you know, you understand it better and, you know, hopefully root for them more. And, you know, I think there's a lot to using it well.
Okay. So now listen, let's talk about how people get a hold of you, social media, website. Anything that you want to give out for contact info?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on all the social medias. Certainly you can contact me through my website, which is www.johncopenhaver.com. I'm John Copenhaver, author, on Facebook, and John Copenhaver on Twitter, X, and at JohnCope74 on Instagram. And you can even find me on TikTok. God help me.
Well, the book comes out June 4th, and it's called Hall of Mirrors. It's a novel. So the author's been with us, John Copenhaver. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Al.
This has been a production of the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our show, guests, or hosts, go to our website at houseofmysteryradio.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.